Hello, Watch Time listeners. Thanks for tuning in to episode 20 of 9 to 5 Mac's Watch Time podcast. Just a quick note this week. I recorded with the wrong microphone by mistake, using my 16-inch MacBook Pro's microphone instead of my usual podcasting microphone. For this reason, my audio will sound a bit off this week, but after 7 years of podcasting, it's a mistake I hopefully won't make for at least another seven. Again, my apologies for a slight audio issue on my part this week. I hope you're all staying safe and enjoy the show. Welcome to 9 to 5 Mac Watch Time, a podcast series exploring the world of Apple Watch and how it impacts people's lives. My next guest is Underscore David Smith, developer of loads of apps, including Sleep++ and Geneva Moon, and co-host of Relay FM's Under the Radar podcast with Marco Arment. Welcome to the show, Dave. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the show, and it's fun to be on.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. We talked a few months ago, and there was interest for both of us, and then there just happens to be major new app that you have ready to ship now, so we get to discuss that in this episode.
I love the watch. It's like it was kind of wild to me recently. I was sitting down and kind of working out how long I've been making watch apps for, and it's 5 years now at this point. Since the watch first came out with those like awful WatchKit 1 apps that we could make, like I made seven of them, and like it was awful, but I loved it, and I've been making them ever since. Like, I just love making watch apps, and like everything about the Apple Watch. It's my favorite platform to develop for at this point. So it's really cool.
That's so cool. I was looking back at just like past 9 to 5 Mac coverage of your apps, Dave, and the first one that I reviewed was, I was 30 days into working for 9 to 5 Mac in 2013. I started on April the 1st, so I'm about to have my 7-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I listened to Under the Developing Perspective. And so I had heard you talking about Feed Wrangler,
sure,
the RSS app. And Google Reader had its end of life. And Feed Wrangler was one of the first, if not, early days of replacing Google Reader. And I've stuck with it since then. And but I was looking back at the review, and it's like it was April 30th. And one of the entries in the screenshot of 9 to 5 Mac's RSS feed was that our main podcast, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour, was now available in iTunes.
Sure.
Man, and iPhones now with Boost Mobile, and the original iPhone will be obsolete soon. And then there were some Johnny Ive iOS 7 rumors. So it was like a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, sure. No, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I mean, I've been making iOS apps back when they were iPhone OS apps, and essentially right back from the beginning. Like I started developing for Apple platforms right when the SDK first launched, and was in the App Store within a couple months of it launching, I think. I would have been there on day one if I could be, but it was back in those days. Yeah. It was hard to get a developer account approved, and so I was a few months late. Otherwise, I've been doing it for over 11 years, I think now, 11, 12 years, however old the iPhone is.
What was the name of the podcast app that you did that was similar to Feed Wrangler?
So I had Pod Wrangler.
Pod Wrangler, I thought so. So you had Pod before, like, Pod Save America. Yep. was saying Pod.
Yeah, I've been podding for a long time.
Yes.
I feel like did I ever make a Pod Wrangler for the watch? It's funny, I can't even keep track anymore. But
yeah, I can't recall.
I know I did Feed Wrangler for the watch. That was one of my early like experiments, and I don't think it really works as a watch app, but at that time we had no idea like what a reasonable watch app actually would be. So I remember making an RSS reader for the watch, and it's like, sure, why not, let's see if it goes anywhere.
I mean, it's kind of niche to have a full RSS reader on the Apple Watch, but now that the watch is much faster and you can have independent apps that can load over cellular and not have to be near the iPhone. So part of my job is just finding news and making sure that I kind of know what's going on in the last hour or so. And so I do use the Twitter app called Chirp, where you can see the full Twitter experience.
Sure.
And I definitely would go on walks and look at Feed Wrangler on the watch just to see like
what's going on in the last few minutes. And like, you know, sometimes I'd like kind of skim. Instapaper was another app where I would use the watch app. It was just for playback control, but it would do like, I think text to speech, and you could listen in your headphones.
Nice.
You know, but you need to have your iPhone with you at the time. But like, those are all kind of niche apps that kind of went away. But, you know, in the early days, it was experimental. And, I think we're kind of coming to a point now where there's, you can at least get a bit of experience with those apps where you don't need to have your iPhone, because it's kind of redundant if you can look on a tiny screen or a large screen.
Yeah,
but if you can be on your own, then there's some utility there.
Yeah, and I think too, the especially with watchOS 6 and the things that we can now do in watch apps, like with a change with SwiftUI versus replacing WatchKit, is I think there's going to be a gradual increase in complexity. I mean, I can say that for myself in terms of I'm able to make much more sophisticated, robust apps for Apple Watch now, just in a way that before it was so painful to do things that were that had any kind of complexity in them. And then, like, to your point, yeah, I mean, the Series 4 and 5 watches are so much more capable in terms of just their computational power, their speed, their networking performance. Like, there's so many things about them that make them feel like actual computers in a way that the earlier watches had a bit more of this sense that they were sort of accessory computers, that they could do things, but it was, you know, they were struggles rather than, you know, the modern watches are, I mean, they're full-fledged computers that can do whatever you want to do on them.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that we can do now is we can walk around and listen to podcasts on the watch without even having an iPhone. It's just, you know, without syncing ahead, have even consume over the internet, which is really cool. For my job as 95 Mac, you know, I've never been a developer, and I don't have clear exposure to the development world, but it's kind of important for covering apps and working with developers. And some of my colleagues are developers, but I have to say that both developing perspective, you know, the 15-minute episode podcast and Under the Radar are both very important for, you know, just having my sea legs with work. Because, sure, you know, I mean, it's right in the name for developing perspective. It gives me an idea of what's going on besides just like the annual WWDC update of how people are working with everything. So just off the bat, like, thank you for those podcasts over the years, because I remember when Developing Perspective went on sort of a hiatus. There was like a break, and then there was a hiatus, and it was like, oh no, well, where do I fill this void?
Sure.
You know? And then Under the Radar certainly does that for me. So thanks for both of this podcast.
No, that's great to hear. I mean, I feel like I enjoy trying to explain and talk about what like, you know, what I do in my craft, I guess, and like it's fun to try and make it in a way that my family listens to the podcasts I do, and I try and always have in the back of my mind that, like, you know, my wife, my mom, my dad, like, they're gonna listen to this, and I hope for it to be interesting. Like, there'll be times that there's an episode where it's like, this is not like we're going in the, you know, Marco and I are going deep down in the weeds, and it's appropriate for this, you know, for the topic, but maybe this is not as much, but generally to try and make it so that it's like, there's useful lessons, both hopefully like from just like a business or life and productivity perspective, or just like interesting things about trying to understand, like, if you're a user of an iPhone or an Apple Watch, that having, you don't need to understand like how it works under the hood, but understanding a little bit of that there, just like just getting a glimpse behind the curtain of like what's going on there, I feel like is often helps. It's like you can be a better user and take better advantage of the tools that you use on your devices if you have a little bit of a sense of like, why do they keep doing, you know, like, why do our apps structured this way? Why does it, you know, why does when you do this thing, this other thing always seems to happen? Or why is, like, why can't they just solve this problem? And it's like, well, that's because that problem is just like intractable and really hard. And it's useful that I think to kind of try and speak in that way rather than getting to, like too low level and too just kind of esoteric about these things, which is an easy thing for us developers to do.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who writes about apps and, you know, it's so useful to have that appreciation, because otherwise it's like, you could definitely write about like, why don't you just do this? And it's so good to know, I mean, especially with the early watch apps, what you can't do and why you can't do those things and what the limitations are. Like, if you didn't realize that there's no SDK for the always-on watch face for third-party apps, then you think, well, why aren't more apps updating for the Series 5 to always be on?
Yeah.
Well, you can't yet. You know, so it's super helpful to have that. Whenever Build and Analyze went away several years ago, Marco Arman had a blog post that was like, this is gone, but check out these podcasts I listen to, and Core Intuition with Manton Reese and Daniel Jackal when they recommended it. So that was my exposure to Core Intuition. And it's the same way where it's developers talking, you know, just like the last couple of weeks or so about what's going on. And you can tune in for the subject, but then you kind of stick around for the personalities.
Sure.
And that's true for like, you know, so many podcasts. And so I am hooked.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And I think, I mean, that's the great thing about podcasting is it feels personal in a way that, you know, I could write, we could put the information in a blog post or a series of tweets or something, but it's different, especially in conversational shows where, you know, you have a sense of the rapport and the friendship between the people who are doing it, that, mm-hmm. it feels like you're listening in on a conversation between two friends. Like, you know, you're just like, you're at the booth next to them at a restaurant and it's just two old friends, you know, talking away and you're just kind of leaning back and you know, eavesdropping, I guess, which has a nice kind of like personal feel to it.
Yeah, my 9to5 Mac Happy Hour podcast colleague Benjamin Mayo was listening to an episode of Watch Time recently, and he was like, he doesn't listen regularly. He was like, it's so weird not being able to respond to you, because that's what he's used to. It's like, you know, it's like if you're you listen to a podcast and there's suddenly a guest on it, it's so weird to actually be talking to the person.
Yeah,
but I guess the reverse is true too.
Oh, sure.
And let's talk about some apps. So you have a lot of apps, and that's been sort of your successful approach is, you know, if you see a problem, trying to solve it and seeing if there's something there in terms of the business. Some of these apps that are relevant to the watch are Sleep++, which is one of, you know, it's an easy to recommend sleep tracking app. Activity++, which like the key feature for me in Activity++ is there is a concept of rest days that sure. Apple lacks. Moon++, which turned into Geneva Moon, is an interesting story there, which was like I think the first Series 5 Compass app that I tried. So that was really neat.
Yeah.
And then later today, we'll talk about your new app called Watchsmith, which has the best name. Yeah. It's so perfect. We'll talk about some of your Apple Watch apps that I mentioned, and if there's anything else you want to discuss too there.
Sure. Yeah. I've probably made and shipped at least a dozen, maybe more of watch apps. The ones that I think have had traction and kind of any kind of real success have been the ones that are mostly in the sort of the health and fitness area. So I have a Pedometer +++ is by far, I think, my most used watch app at this point, which is a step counting app that is it's a controversial topic in fitness, but it's like some people really like steps and some people like things like active calories or, you know, sort of more like there's just different measures for what you're trying to measure. And it's like for some people, steps make a lot of sense because, you know, it's something that's nice and concrete that like you can imagine that it's in the same way that if you measure your, you know, distance, it's like it's this sense of I can go out for a walk and I know I can get them. Whereas I know as a user, but sometimes it's like activity, it can be complicated where you're like, well, I went for a brisk walk and I went for a walk for 30 minutes and I got 22 minutes of activity exercise minutes. And it's kind of abstract and it's based on things that are less ephemeral. So anyway, but like I say, so I have an app that's Pedometer +++, which is a step counter that has done really well there. And then Sleep++ is an interesting kind of it's an app that I feel like I don't know what its future is, because I keep feeling like, I mean, I've been thinking it's going to happen for probably 3 years now that Apple was going to introduce their own sleep tracking, but in the meantime, you know, it's been nice to kind of fill that void that doing as best we can as third-party developers to do basic sleep tracking on the watch and kind of getting exploring that space and just creating that as an opportunity that, you know, I think an Apple Watch collects so much information that it's really nice to kind of think of ways to use things, even if it's not even necessarily in the way that it's intended. You know, like I'm doing my sleep tracking and analysis based on, you know, the steps you take, the heart rate you have, and the sort of active calories you generate. Those are the primary data sources I use. And you can use those and you can kind of, with some kind of, you know, thoughtful algorithm design, you can just interpret roughly when someone's sleeping and roughly how well they're sleeping.
Well, a couple of things there first. Pedometer versus active calorie or step tracking versus, it reminds me of like a basketball game score, you know, that can get like over 100 versus like a football game where both teams have really good defense. You know,
sure.
Score. So whichever one clicks for you as motivation, you know, you'll see 10,000 steps. Wow, that's awesome. Versus like 300 calories or 500 calories. It's like just not the same scale. So, and I think that the beauty of Pedometer +++ is that there's you can find your steps in the activity app, but it's like, you know, several layers down, and you can't make a complication for that with the built-in stuff. So you've got to have an app for that, and Pedometer Plus Plus is just like the one, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to the thing that's nice there is with, like, is integrating the steps between your watch and your phone, because they both devices have step counters built into them, is actually something that is one of a feedback I get a lot, that people want to know, because depending on what you're doing, your steps that are collected, like the ones that are shown in the activity app, are only the steps collected by your watch. They're not and anything connected with the steps that are collected by your phone, which for most people with most activities, your watch is probably a better metric of how much, of how many steps you've taken in a day, because your watch is physically attached to your wrist, you know, all day long. Whereas your phone may or may not be in your pocket. It might be in a bag. It, you know, can be in a lot of places. But, I've definitely run into lots of circumstances where, it's, you know, it's the classic one for me. And part of why I really got into making sure that it, like, the syncing algorithm worked well there was when my kids were young and I would push a stroller. I wouldn't get steps when I would take, you know, I'd go on these long, like 2 or 3 mile walks, you know, with my kids in a stroller, and I wouldn't get any steps for it basically, because my wrist is completely stationary the entire time, because it's attached to the, you know, I'm just essentially attached to the stroller pushing it along. But my phone is in my pocket, you know, gathering steps all this time. And so it's also one of those things where most of the health and fitness data collection, in the, you know, in Apple's world happens on the watch, and it collects so much information. You know, there's just these huge amounts of data that get collected all the time. But in that's one case where there's sometimes that, you know, having your phone, which can do this basic, but, you know, this is sort of this basic motion tracking, is actually a useful thing to fill in those gaps, in a smart way.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Pedometer Plus Plus dates back to the iPhone 5S, which added the step tracking chip inside, but Apple didn't show that data in any way. There was no way to see what it had collected, and that's before the Apple Watch.
Yeah, I am pretty confident that I was the first step counting app on iOS.
I think so too.
I like it, given the, like, I think I launched as soon as that, like, I remember distinctly, like, they had the keynote, and it's like, I think I remember very, like, I mean, it's a very important app for me. It's like by far the biggest app I've ever made. And I remember, like, Phil Schiller introducing that, you know, it had the step counter, and it was like, there was one slide in the 5S keynote, where he introduced the phone, and he kind of made this offhand remark. And then the ability to actually do the step counting appeared in the sort of the Goldmaster version of whatever iOS version that was. There's no documentation. It was entirely just like, there was just, it was, you know, this, the ability to do it was sort of added in there, but it was no, and then I just, like, spent the next week, furiously trying to implement whatever I basically could, like, it, reverse engineer for how this was going to work. Then I, you know, when I, that, for that phone, I got up in the, you know, I basically camped out outside of an Apple store, you know, sort of all night, it was in the Apple store. As soon as it opened, it was like maybe like 10th or 12th person in line, get my 5S, rush back to my office, like, see if it actually works. Like, all this week of speculative work actually worked, and then immediately submitted the app. And so, like, it was, my goal with that one was to be there right at the start. And it's like, it's just sort of, the app has continued to grow and to sort of develop from there. I mean, that first version, all it did was show you your step count. Like, it didn't, there was no smarts to it. There was no trends. There was no streaks, like, none of this stuff. It was just pulling that number from the device that, yeah, like you said, there was no other way to see it. So, you know, that app's been around for years and years at this point. I mean, however old the 5S is at this point.
Yeah, that'd be fall 2013. So that's September 2013. And I think it was iOS 7. So it was pretty massive year.
Oh, sure.
And then that positioned you well for the Apple Watch.
Exactly. Right?
Because you had the phone, and the Apple Watch came in the, like 6 months after the iPhone 6, so the next phone plus 6 months.
Yeah.
So you had about 18 months experience with Pedometer Plus Plus.
Yeah.
And then you could bring that to the Apple Watch.
Yeah. And I think what I found, what was really exciting, was I discovered that I really enjoy making health and fitness related applications. Like, there is something satisfying about it, both in terms of, it's an app that I use on a daily basis that, like, is part of my life and my lifestyle. Like, I can use this thing, which, while some of the apps that I've made before, like, I make them because I use them, like, they're less a pervasive part. Like, I read RSS, but I try not to read it all the time. Whereas, you know, health and fitness is something that I feel like, is a more part of my life. And it's something too that like I can share with my, you know, share with my parents and my friends and my family. Like it's a very accessible thing. And like there is nothing more satisfying too than like making an app that, you know, someone is able to use to have like a profound impact on their life. And I got a taste of that with Pedometer Plus Plus, and even more so, like the more watch stuff I've, you know, gotten into, where like, you know, you get an email from someone who says, you know, they've lost 100 pounds using your app. And obviously like they didn't lose the, you know, they didn't lose all that weight using the app. They did the hard work themselves, but like the app was a part of that, that was a thing that, you know, sort of helped keep them accountable or help motivate them or whatever that might be. And like that feedback is, you know, like you can't, you sort of, you can't beat that kind of a feeling. And so I was very fortunate to, you know, have gone down that road of getting into health and fitness. And then obviously in like Apple turned into that in a huge way. Like they went way down the road in terms of health and fitness and their emphasis on it. And, you know, it was a really fortunate place to kind of just like being able to keep going with that when the watch came out.
Yeah. Every year there tends to be a new sensor of some type or a new chip, something that is to serve a health and fitness purpose. Even with the Series 5, I mean, it's got nearly the same chip inside, but the always on face kind of only works in apps with the workout app. So in that sense, it's still a health and fitness update there. So that's really cool. And I think, if I'm trying to catch you right, before even like iPhone development, you did Palm apps?
Sure. Right? So my very first job back in 2000 was I wrote apps for the Palm. It was back then, I think it was the Palm 5. I think it was the device that I was targeting. And that was like my first ever job being a professional developer. I made apps for Palm way back in the day. I mean, it was a totally different kind of thing, but it turned out to be very fortuitous to like have a, like had, I had a, you know, several, and I kept developing them, you know, probably through like 2005, I think, or so. And it turned out I ended up working on like a Pocket PC with like Microsoft's kind of Palm competitor. But I ended up having a lot of experience developing what is, you know, we didn't call them mobile apps then, but that was basically what they were, and getting used to that. And in many ways, that experience has been even more helpful with watch development, because those were devices that didn't have like ubiquitous connectivity, that were very low powered, and you would kind of have these very constrained resources, and you had to deal with syncing and data sync, you know, issues and those types of things. And in many ways, it reminds me of the early versions of the Apple Watch, where it was that same kind of like everything is piggybacking. You know, back then we would, you know, plug our Palm into our PC and sync to it.
Yeah.
Whereas now it was much more, you know, that the iPhone was playing that role. But there's definitely, I've been making apps for small screens for a very long time.
I love that connection and how it positioned you. I had some kind of a Palm in around like 2007 that I had just like some family member had given me, and it wasn't doing anything. I had a computer at home, so I would like play with it.
Sure.
But it was just like, I like tech and this is tech, you know, yeah. And you know, I would carry around at school and everything and like, you know, not really doing much with it. But I love that connection to the watch there. And then some of your other apps from the earlier days of just at least me following you was, you know, and it still exists, a big focus on audiobook apps, yep, and cookbooks, right?
Yep. I did. Yeah. My first app that ever was sort of like widely successful was an audiobook app that sort of provided a front end for a way to listen to free and public domain audiobooks. And that app was my first app this is probably like 6 months after the App Store launched that I made that. And it like was the first thing that I made that actually had like an audience and a, you know, sort of turned this from like a side gig that was a thing that I enjoyed doing. But at the time I was like a web developer, and this is like my side hobby. And that was the first app that I made where it was like, okay, like rather than having a couple more clients for the next 6 months, I can have like, you know, half as many clients, and one of my clients essentially will be my app work. And then eventually the app work just kind of like grew up to a point that I stopped doing the web consulting. But that was like, yeah, audiobooks, and then I had a recipe organizer. But I mean, it's a bit of a funny thing, but I joke that I have a very short attention span, that I've made, you know, I think at this point I've probably launched, well, it's probably in around the 60 to 70 in like unique apps, to the App Store, over the last, you know, sort of like 10 or 12 years. And, you know, most of those have failed. Most of those haven't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. And like, that's okay. I'm used to that. And the reality, you know, but as long as, you know, maybe one in 20 have had some kind of reasonable traction and attention, and that's been enough for me. But I love making things, and so it's fun to have a career where I can just keep, you know, when I have an idea, I can, like, there's no, I don't have to like get approval for making it. I can just go and make it, and that's so that's why I end up with so many things, and it's, you know, it's just like some of them work and some of them don't, but I enjoy that process. And so it's been a long journey of just like, I keep trying things, and if it works, it's great. And a lot of them just like, there's also seasonality to them. Like things, you know, some apps only exist and are only useful for a period, and then, you know, they'll be Sherlocked, or they'll, you know, just society will move on or whatever it is. And the need won't be quite as great. And so you just kind of keep rolling with it. And I just keep enjoying, you know, Apple keeps making new stuff for me to play with. So I'll just keep adopting whatever the new stuff is as soon as it comes out.
Yeah. Talk about Plus. I know it's developer related.
Sure.
Maybe C++ related. I'm not in depth enough to know.
Oh, sure.
But it's a common theme between your apps, yes, including Geneva Moon, which was Moon Plus before WatchOS. It was just impossible to find it in the App Store.
Yeah. So, I mean, so Plus is a bit of a, yes, it's a bit of a, I guess, a developer joke that it was a, you know, so in development, when you have a variable, so you have, you know, you're going to store a number, you put put 5 into a variable, and you're going to store that 5. If you want to just increment that by 1, you can just say like variable name +++. And so it's a way of kind of it speaks to the sense of counting up in programming. And so when I was doing, you know, trying to come up with a name for my step counter, it just kind of like, it just fit. And it's one of those things like that like crazy week that I was talking about earlier, where it was almost like this weird fever dream where I'm just like just frantically trying to understand how this API works. And it's just like, the name was like the farthest thing from my mind. And I just like,
sure,
that name popped in my head, and I put it in, and it's kind of stuck. And then, you know, subsequently I named, you know, it's like C++ and, Moon +++. I have Workouts +++. Like there's a bunch of different kind of, it became a thing that was just sort of like my signature for a lot of applications until became problematic in WatchOS, because in the App Store on WatchOS, it's really hard to create it. I mean, you have to do dictation or the scribble typing in order to like search for something. And you can do it. Like if you said moon +sign +sign, it would correctly transcribe it for you, but no one ever did that. And so it ended up just renaming it and deciding that for watch apps and for watch focused apps, I have to kind of move away from the +++ because it's just, it caused more trouble than it was worth.
and plus is a pretty standard, you know, way to attach and modify something. Like there's Apple TV Plus, for example, there's News Plus. So having +++ is just kind of like a one up on that in my view.
Sure.
Yeah. You've got, there's a concept with activity and workout, but you know, +++, like it's even better than
plus it's two more, it's two pluses. That's, you know,
exactly.
That's way better. it's twice as good.
Yeah. iPhone 6S +++.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Have you experienced, I think in iOS 13.4, specifically like Google search, I think a plus is ignored in search, where if you type in like, M plus M, it'll just be MM. While Bing and DuckDuckGo and I guess Yahoo don't do that, but I think it's new to 13.4. I'm not sure if that affects you or not.
I haven't seen this specifically, but I could see it. I mean, it has been both good and bad to have this. Like my general naming scheme for a lot of my things is fairly generic. Where I, you know, like having an app like Workouts +++, like it's good in the sense that if someone searches for workouts, I often will sort of search well for that. But it often can sometimes, it can go the other way where it's too generic and things can get, you know, it's like you, it get lost, you know, if it gets lost in the, like if you just go to Google and search for it, you may or may not get it just because it might think, oh, you're searching for workouts in general, and it's just going to show you a bunch of generic workouts results rather than having a name for an app that's a bit more specific and like sort of novel in that way. But it's also like it's come back. It's gone full circle with me, where sometimes it's been really good, and it's like if you search for pedometer in the App Store, pedometer +++ comes up right now, is that I think it's the number one hit, which is great.
Awesome.
Which is partly because it's been around for so long, but also just like it's a nice, if you, it seems like you're searching for the name of the app because the name of the app is a more generic term. But yeah, it sometimes it bites me and sometimes it doesn't. So that's why, like, I'm in general, it's like I'm starting to ease off of that a little bit, just to try and have the names be a little bit more unique and novel. It's worked well as this, as having that sense of sort of continuity between them, because a lot of those apps are all about health and fitness, and that's been something it worked well as a branding tool there.
9to5Mac Watch Time is sponsored by Flick Type Keyboard, the easiest way to type directly from your Apple Watch. It's no secret that the Apple Watch is a great way to receive messages and stay connected, but the biggest challenge is responding to those messages. Features like Scribble and Voice Dictation are wonderful, but you can't always draw out a long message or speak your message out loud. That's where FlickType Keyboard comes in. With FlickType, you can quickly compose messages on your Apple Watch using a real keyboard. FlickType Keyboard works just as you would expect. It's kind of magical. You can double tap the space bar to insert a period and use a digital crown for alternative word suggestions, emoji, and punctuation. FlickType is also insanely accurate thanks to its sophisticated correction algorithm. Due to limitations in watchOS, FlickType Keyboard works best with the Messages app, but it's also integrated into some of my favorite watchOS apps, like Chirp for Twitter. There's even a dedicated FlickType Keyboard complication for your watch face, making it easy to access the keyboard whenever you need it. FlickType Keyboard is available on the App Store as a one-time purchase of $199. Search the App Store for FlickType Keyboard or use the link in this episode's show notes to support the podcast. My thanks to FlickType for their support of 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
Yep. I want to close the loop on two thoughts. I've got my Apple Notes, so that's like the overall guide for the podcast, but I also do a notebook where I like write down things as you're talking. And sure. So there's two things that I want to close the loop on. The first is several minutes ago, we talked about Sleep++ and then like the years-long pending Apple Sleep app, whatever that will be like, if it ever is released. And something that I thought about there is that, there's this whole concept of Sherlocking, where Apple makes a feature, and then this feature that a developer made, including an app named Sherlock, right? Was Sherlocked by Spotlight, gets replaced because there's something built in. But in many cases, it turns out, I believe, that Apple's version does one specific thing, and then third-party apps will do things differently. So you can kind of boost the signal there. But with sleep apps, it's interesting because I use several sleep apps, and you can prioritize them in the health app on the iPhone so that you can see like which one you want to be like priority, I think.
Yeah.
But I use Sleep++ plus like every other sleep app so that I can have experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that will continue to be true, if Apple does an Apple sleep app. But that's something I thought about, is that it won't necessarily I can see Apple's being different enough that it has its own benefits over third-party apps, but it also lacks some of what years and years of development have added in third-party apps.
Yeah. And I think I'm not necessarily worried that, when Apple comes out with whatever their sleep tracking is, that seems, any year could be the year of sleep tracking on Apple Watch. Yeah. I'm not really necessarily worried about it. And many things, part of me, the optimistic part of me is just really excited about that, because there's a hard limit to what we as third-party developers can sort of, the amount we can tell you about your sleep and how accurately we can analyze your sleep. Because during the night, your watch is collecting your heart rate maybe every 3 to 7 minutes maybe. Which is useful, but is not really what you would need to give, sort of a granular analysis of someone's sleep. When, and your emotion while you're sleeping is useful, but is also not necessarily indicative. There are many times that I'm lying in bed completely still, but not asleep. Right. And so it's very difficult as a third party to be able to differentiate that. And my hope is that what Apple will be able to do is, because they're Apple and because they can run at a much lower level and they can run all the time, they'll be able to generate a lot more detail at a much higher resolution that is then available in the health app, probably, to third party apps. And so my hope is that what's going to happen is they're just going to create a really, they'll have an app in a way for, if you just wanted to use Apple's version, that you can get a sense of your sleep, and that'll be great. But if that data is also then subsequently available to other apps, then we have the ability to present it to people in a way that might be more appropriate for what you're trying to track, and what trends are you interested in, and just visually, how do you like to display that kind of data? And so, my hope is that they're going to make that data available, which it seems consistent with, you know, in general, that's all, you know, what Apple has done time and time again is they create this data source, they write that data in a way that developers can access, and then we can come up with sort of alternative views into that, which, you know, with sleep, I think is a really interesting thing. So depending on what you're trying, your goals with your sleep are, like, you might be very interested in totally different things. You're interested in about, you're trying to get to bed at the same time every night, and that's your goal, and that's what you're focused on. Like, then you need, you know, visualizations and things that are focused on your bedtime. Or is it the quality of your sleep or the duration of your sleep? Or just, you know, sometimes I think people just have a sense of, they just want validation that you wake up and you don't feel rested, and there's something weirdly reassuring when you then look at your sleep tracker and it says you didn't sleep well last night. And it's like, okay, no, that wasn't just me. That wasn't like, I actually, I, whatever it is, I didn't sleep well. And it's, so my hope is, like, I'm still hopeful that, for that. And I really kind of look forward to what Apple does there, because, you know, I've used a variety of different, in the development of Sleep++, I've used a bunch of other non-Apple Watch sleep trackers, just because it's kind of important for me to understand how different people have solved the problem. And it's amazing with devices that, like, for example, I have a device called a Whoop that does continuous heart rate monitoring. So it's a device that does, like, it's essentially as though the Apple Watch is in workout mode, where it's doing, like, the fully cranked up, like, you know, heart rate samples continuously, you know, a few times a second, probably, all night. Like, that's just, that it's always doing that. And it's able to give you a much higher level of granularity about, like, exactly where you are in your sleep and what you were doing and, like, that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not sure Apple would go there, like, from a battery life perspective, but they could certainly crank up from what they're doing now, and they could, you know, I'm sure they have lots of intelligence about when they can turn that on. Like, huh, it seems like something interesting is happening in your sleep cycle. Let's track your heart rate for the next, you know, the next 30 minutes and understand that. And, like, they can do stuff that is just impossible for someone like me to be able to do.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, for folks who have the main Apple Watch and then they sleep track with an older Apple Watch, try, like, logging a workout and going to bed and seeing what it does to battery life overnight, because the only thing it's doing is that 8 hours.
Yeah, I've done that exact thing. I've done it a few times. I mean, it works in that context where if you have a night and a day Apple Watch, because in my experience, like, you know, you can run a workout for 8 hours, and it will just about drain the battery of an Apple Watch down. But you're able to do it. And so,
yeah,
like, I've thought about going down that road, but it's just such a niche thing for actually encouraging someone to do that. And it's kind of a bit of a slight abuse of the workout API, to be calling this, I don't know, like a mindfulness workout or something. Like, I don't know what you would even call that, the activity type when you're starting the workout. But it is definitely something that's possible, and it's, you know, I think Apple definitely has an opportunity there to, you know, you don't need the heart rate tracking to be quite as granular as when you're working out, because it doesn't change as precipitously. You know, it's not like if you're doing, you know, high intensity intervals or something where your heart rate is going way up and then way down and then way up and then way down, and you really want the workout app to be tracking that, you know, each of those curves. And if it was only keeping track of your heart rate once a minute, you would miss, you know, huge amounts of the data. But like with sleep, you may actually, there's probably a granularity where you can still have battery life, but have that kind of like information that you need to gather as well.
And speaking of abusing the workout app, I think it might have been one of your episodes, but it just kind of is in my mind now that there was, it might have been Podring, I don't know, but there was some app that let you, maybe it was Overcast, an early version, but let you log a workout, like a walk, and that would let continuous playback in the background.
Sure. This was my app Workouts++.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So because I had written a fully featured workout app that was, you know, like Workouts++ was one of my apps I made that was all about having a very customizable workout display. So like what you actually see on your wrist when you're working out. And that was its sort of conceit. But then I also had written I have an entire podcast app as well, like that sort of, I don't have to build that from scratch. And I realized that at the time, this was before background audio was possible on the Apple Watch, that I could sort of combine those two things together. And because I'm not like abusing the workout API because it's only works when you're in a workout. So the intention is like, if you go for a run and you start a run, well, I'm running because I'm your workout tracker. I can also then play audio. And so I just kind of like combine those two things together. And then it, you know, a few months later, proper background audio came to Apple Watch. And so the app never, you know, like that feature ultimately kind of never went anywhere, but it was kind of a fun, before it was possible, a kind of a way to work around a limitation on watchOS.
Yeah, I love that like approach to just sort of like innovating with what's possible. It's so signature throughout your apps for so long, so that's really cool. The last thought I wanted to close before we get to WatchSmith is just a comment that I can totally relate to your stroller workouts.
Sure.
And I definitely had a stroller technique where when I would go for a run with either of my kids in the jogging stroller, I would try my best to just have one hand on the stroller and the other hand in motion, whichever had the watch on it. And then I would trade out for a moment and then I'd go back to like the watch hand being in motion for that reason. It's still an unsolved problem there.
Well, and one thing that you, I will say that you can do, it doesn't work as quite as well, is you can put your watch on your ankle.
Okay.
And you will get some, but not perfect heart rate data. And you will get motion data pretty well. So it's one of those, like, it's not a perfect solution to that problem, but it is something that I've run into, and I've tried it a few times because for depending on what kind of workout you're doing, like there's sometimes that I find it really awkward to wear my Apple Watch when I'm working out for the kind of workouts I do. And like, I'll have like a wrist wrap on or something where like, it's really awkward to have a watch there. And sometimes I'll put my watch, on my ankle for that reason. Or, for a while I actually had it, like I'd wear a chest mounted, heart rate strap. And then I would just start a workout and put my watch just in my pocket, and it would track the workout fine, and I would have heart rate data and everything. It would, you know, sort of it would work pretty well, and I just wouldn't actually have to have my watch physically on my wrist because that's just, like I said, sometimes that's just doesn't quite work out for the kind of workout that I, depending on what the workout you're doing is.
Yeah, 12 South makes that accessory where it's like an armband for your Apple Watch, like the old days of the iPhone.
Yep. No. I have that and I tried it. I mean, well, the reality, yeah. I think the theme you're hopefully picking up on, it's like anything related to the Apple Watch, I have almost certainly tried.
Yes.
It's like, I found that thing that it was kind of annoying to keep like getting it in and out of.
Right.
But it works. Like, you can definitely wear an Apple Watch, like, you know, pretty much anywhere that it needs, anywhere that it's connected to this, you know, touching your skin, it'll be able to get a reasonable amount of heart rate just because your blood is everywhere and your blood is moving everywhere. So like, it just needs to have a nice firm connection to your skin.
Yeah. And then the Polar OH1 is a heart rate strap that I like because it doesn't go in your chest, which I found to be just too cumbersome. But it goes on your arm or leg or wherever, and you can do like your upper arm, and it charges, you have to charge it regularly. It's like, you know, several hours of your life. You can maybe use it for a few days and then recharge it. But It's whereas the chest ones are like, they use, I think it's a coin battery that lasts almost forever. But the OH1 from Polar, I found to be very cool for whenever I just want to use a heart rate monitor for different data than the Apple Watch.
Yeah, no, that's actually good to know. I've used the chest, but it's like the chest straps for me, I always found to be kind of awkward for the same reason where like, if you're doing like push-ups or rowing or something that your chest is, like, or doing bench press or like anything that involves like your chest touching something, or burpee, or like there's so many movements that involve like something pressing on your chest, I always found it really awkward and uncomfortable to have a heart rate strap there, even though it gives really good data. But I might have to check that out just as a, because I mean, I'm always looking for different tools and things that I can test maps in different ways. So
yeah,
it's like putting on a heart rate strap on my wrist or on my like upper arm or something would be a great place for it while I'm working out.
Yeah. So I love that. Let's talk about WatchSmith now.
Sure.
So I'll kind of set the stage for this. In October 2018, our great friend Stephen Chowton Smith was using SpriteKit, which is a framework that my understanding is anything that's like animations related is powered by this, is that right?
So SpriteKit is Apple's sort of 2D animation system. Okay. So anything that's kind of that it's not a 3D system, you know, scene where you have that sense of three dimensionality, but if you have like, if you imagine like a game like, you know, like Super Mario Brothers or something, where you have that kind of animation but in a 2D fashion, that's sort of Apple's system for doing that. And it was the only kind of robust animation system we had on WatchOS until WatchOS 6, where we got SwiftUI, where we have proper animation now.
Yeah, so this was, you know, before this was around WatchOS 5, and STS was using this tool to sort of play around with what's possible with third-party watch faces that you can't officially do. You can't run them, like release them as an app and run them full-time, but just, you know, sort of as a playground using Xcode to see, like, what would be possible if Apple supported it and allowed it.
Yeah.
And you were very much interested in that, right? And sort of doing your own versions of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got, so this project for WatchSmith got started when I started, I saw that he was starting to, like, basically he had come up with this way of kind of simulating what a watch face would look like on the Apple Watch. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. And so I just spent the next like month making a whole bunch of my own custom watch faces that, you know, like I said, you can't ship these. They're not like actual things that you can ship, but just the design and the, like process of doing that was something that I just found really compelling, that there's something really, it's an interesting design challenge to make something that is like useful and legible and beautiful, and still fits and is like on a teeny little screen. Like when you look at a 38 millimeter Apple Watch is tiny. And so like it's a really fun design problem to be like, what can I show there? What data can I put there? You know, what information would be useful to put on a watch face? Even though, you know, this isn't something that I can, you know, make as the actual watch face. It was just a fun design experiment. And that definitely got me down the road, to where I am now of like, I just love making things for watch faces, which right now the best we can do is complications. That then ultimately got me down the road of, with WatchSmith is an app that is, entirely geared around trying to just come up with unique and novel and beautiful ways of displaying information on your Apple Watch screen and displaying it in ways that aren't like beyond the kind of very static, I kind of like the aesthetic of the Apple Watch, like in WatchOS, I guess it was 5 and 6, they have this rounded, very kind of, oblong, bright and colorful look to it, which is nice. But sometimes I find that I don't like that. Like sometimes I want something a bit more sharp or a bit less colorful, or just with different UI or a different aesthetic. And I was trying to come up with ways to make it so that you can make the watch look like how you want it. You know, like if you went to a watch store, sometimes you might want to buy the bright, colorful, rounded one, and sometimes you might want like the sort of the sharp, elegant one. And trying to make a way to make that as an option, where you can really make the watch face look however you want to make it, and not just base it on whatever, you know, sort of the choices that Apple has made, whether you, because sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not.
9 to 5 Mac Watch Time is sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep quality is as easy as wearing your Apple Watch during sleep. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. One of Pillow's most beloved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. You can even compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many more health metrics to discover how they might be affecting your sleep. Pillow can optionally record sound you make during sleep. From sleep talking to sleep apnea or snoring and unexpected noises that might be affecting your sleep, Pillow says a lot of users have been surprised by the results. Pillow is also very privacy-minded. All your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device and your iCloud storage account using end-to-end encryption. Pillow doesn't have user accounts, so you can use it anonymously. It doesn't collect or send your personal data anywhere else. And afternoon naps are something I'm a big fan of, trust me. I'll often set my alarm for 30 minutes, then wake up refreshed after 10 or 15 minutes. Naps boost your focus, creativity, and overall well-being. If you're working from home, like a lot of us are, you can also track this sleep using Pillow's power nap modes. If you need an alarm, Pillow can wake you up using your iPhone, Apple Watch, or iPad. If you have WatchOS 6 installed on your Apple Watch, the latest version, the latest update of Pillow uses the new extended runtime feature to minimize battery consumption on the Apple Watch. Even if you already have a favorite sleep tracking app, data nerds like me can benefit from comparing data between apps and finding patterns. Pillow is available on the App Store for the iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Search the App Store and download Pillow today to support 9to5 Mac Watch Time. Discover all of Pillow's features at naybox.com/pillow. That's naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. My thanks to Pillow for their support of 9to5 Mac Watch Time.
Right. And so one of my favorite inventions from you is the fact that on an analog watch face, on a digital watch, you know, we all know the problem of the minute and hour hand can cover the date if the date is within the dial.
Yep.
And, 2:15 is just like, who knows what day it is.
Yeah.
And you have this really cool idea that is shift the date above or below the hands when possible so that, hey, it's a digital watch. Why can't you see it?
Yeah, exactly. So this is one of these things where one of the things that I enjoy about this is like, I've spent a lot of time doing research around like the classic mechanical sort of watch industry and the way that, you know, the things that they've designed and why they do things the way they do them. And like, it's been a really fun process. Like I got my first, it's a very basic, but I have a basic mechanical watch that I got as part of this project where I was like, I just need to have a watch that ticks and like see what that's like. And I got this like $90 Seiko that's, you know, but it's cool. And it has gears in it. And it, you know, if you have to like, you power it by shaking your arm back and forth. Like there's something really cool about that. But it's also, the more I got down that road, like there are some things that feel really funny when you bring them over into the Apple Watch that feel like the Apple Watch is tying its hands behind its back because it's being this sort of homage to something that's physical and mechanical and that has existed in the world for so long. And so things like covering up the contents of a complication with the hands, it always seems like, well, that's silly. Like why, like I'm a, you know, like this is a fully dynamic display that I can put lots of things and I can't, I have limitations in terms of how much I can move the contents because all I can do at this point in WatchSmith is display, you know, I have the contents of a complication and I can move my content within that complication. But, you know, to the degree that I can move it to the edges of the complication to avoid the hands, like that's a feature that I came up with where it's like, it means that most of the time you're able to read the date irrespective of the time, you know, so it isn't when it's 2:15 and you're like, I don't know, who knows what's going on. Like I'll shift it all the way out as best I can, or shrink it down a little bit to make it fit. There's lots of kind of features that I'm trying to do that are like, what are things that are, that you can only do on a watch that is a digital watch that is only, you know, that you couldn't do when it was something that was physical. You know, in the same way that like, so in WatchSmith, I make it so that you can schedule when you want different complications to appear in a particular slot. So, you know, like, which is something that in the mechanical world, obviously you have to decide, like, do I want the date or not? And if you buy a watch that has a date window in it, then, well, you're always going to see that date, even if you don't actually want to see the date or whatever that might be. And so... Mm-hmm. It's like, well, on a digital watch, well, why don't I just make it so that you can change what's shown in the complication, you know, based on the time. So if you want to see the weather in the morning and, you know, when you're at work, it shows you what your next event is. And then, you know, when you get home, it changes to your activity rings. And then at 9 o'clock, it goes blank. Like, great. Mm-hmm. Like it can totally do that because it's not a mechanical watch. It's a digital watch that I can, you know, have complete control over what's actually being shown in the slot. And so it's kind of fun to think of these things that are, you know, what are the things that are these sort of anachronistic holdovers from physical watches, and what are things that I can actually just do and improve on and make better.
Yeah. You have a great blog post that is announcing Project Geneva, I think in October 2019. So yeah. It was the last fall. And then here in April, it releases. And I think the great approach of the blog is that you've been looking at, you know, prior to Project Geneva, looking at it as, you know, it's glass half empty or half full. And half empty is that you can't customize watch faces and check them.
Yeah.
Half full is that you can customize so much else around it with complications.
Exactly.
So it turns out to be a lot of the watch face you could sort of customize. And so, for example, you could schedule to have a corner complication show the date at 2:50, you know, between say 2:10 and 2:20, when it's obstructed, you could have that complication be scheduled to change to a date then, so that, you know, you don't lose that, but then not have it there the rest of the day. So for example, the way that I've used WatchSmith, just in sort of trying it out and getting a feel for it, is The only watch face that I use this year is California in circle mode.
Sure.
And it's just been kind of, I want to use one watch face for a long time, kind of the way I see my wife use her watch, and a lot of other people use their watches.
Yeah.
Before that, I would change throughout the week, maybe throughout the day,
yeah.
and do a lot of time just kind of tinkering.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've been doing this approach, and so WatchSmith supports the corner complications on the California circular face, and so
yeah.
I've got the bottom right corner to be the dynamic complication using WatchSmith, and so from midnight to 5 a.m. it will show the time for sunrise. And so if I wake up and I want to go out for a workout, I can see, or go out for a run, for example, or a bike ride, I can see what time is sunrise. So
yeah.
Do I need to wait until this point? And that's useful. And then from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m., which is like my morning preparation, I'm seeing the weather there with the current temperature, the low and the high. And this then replaces the sunrise complication because I no longer care about sunrise
sure.
the rest of the
like,
day.
Who cares about the sunrise after sunrise?
Right. And so that's very useful. I know how to dress my kids, dress myself, et cetera. And then from 8 a.m., this is essential time when I log on for work, until 2 p.m., I'm seeing sort of the calendar and how many events are on the calendar that day and, you know, how close you are to the next one. And that's like work mode. It makes perfect sense for me. And then from 2 to 4 p.m., I'm seeing the London time zone because I podcast with my colleague Benjamin Mayo in London.
Sure.
And so it's very useful to know what time it is for him when we're talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So for that 2-hour stretch. And then from 4, when I finish work for the day, until 8 p.m., I'm seeing the activity data. So, you know, how many active calories and stand hours and workout I've achieved. Because it's kind of the time where if I didn't, sometimes I work out in the morning, and so I don't care. It's all at 0 until I finish the workout.
Sure.
And then I need to continue throughout the day to complete it. But from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., it's like, this is game time.
Yeah.
You know how close, how much is left. And then it's so cool how the dynamic this can be, because from 8 until 10, I'm seeing basically a Geneva moon, right?
Sure.
It's the moon complication there.
Yep.
But the whole Geneva moon approach is that it's accurate to the sky. You look at the watch, and it's the same moon you see in the sky.
Yep.
And then from 10 to midnight, it's kind of a clue to, you know, go to bed because it shows me the stars.
Yeah.
And until midnight, when it's way too late to be awake, and it shows me sunrise. It's like,
yep.
This is how much time until you get to wake up. You know?
Yeah.
That's one watch face, one corner complication. But it's so cool to just expect that complication to change throughout the day. And it kind of frees up other complications because I no longer need to see activity rings all the time, where in the morning they're kind of useless. They're all at 0.
Yeah.
I only see them until the afternoon. And you know, it's so neat. And weather, like, those are two complications that I always have showing before a WatchSmith because I want to know them when I want to know them. But now it's tuned to being a little bit for time, and it actually frees up two more complications. So I've been able to add more third-party watch complications that
yep.
I didn't have room for before.
Yep. No, and I think that is something that I've found myself too. And like, I've ultimately settled on I use the California face, but in the full screen version,
mm-hmm.
which is primarily because I don't know what it is about my brain, but I can't read an analog watch unless it has numbers on it. Like, it's just, I don't know how people do it where you have a circle with little like tick marks on it and somehow you can read and know what the time is. Like, it's kind of a funny thing given that I've spent the last 6 months of my life, like, deeply analyzing, you know, watches. I've built several complete watch systems. Like, I have all this, I know everything there is to know about watches, but I can't read the time on a watch unless it has numbers on it. So I use the California face, with numbers on it. But the problem with that face only has one slot in it. And so before, what I would have had to have done is it's like, I don't know what I would have put there. Like, sometimes I'm interested in the weather. Sometimes I'm interested in my activity data. Sometimes I'm interested in who knows what. Like, it's this constantly, this like, it's there's this such this scarcity of real estate on a lot of the faces, and especially the ones that I feel like are the most aesthetic faces. Like, there's like, you can use the modular face, which is great, but it's just like, there is just so much there. Or like the infograph face, the classic infograph one where you have four complications in the middle, you have the bezel on the top, on like where the numbers would go, and then you have the four corners. And like, that is a lot of stuff that you're trying to squeeze into something if you're actually going to want to be able to.
It makes it harder to read the time.
Yeah, like, you have no idea what the time is. Like, you need a you can set that, when maybe you need one of your complications to be showing you the time so that you can read the time in it. Like, it gets a little, It gets a little silly there. And so that's something that I just like, being able to use the more kind of streamlined, simplified watch faces. And then just, yeah, like you said, like have it be dynamic and relevant for, you know, for what I do. Because most of the time, it's like I'm interested. Yeah, it's like I want to know the weather in the morning much more usually than I want to know the, you know, sort of the weather once when I go to bed. Yeah. And it's, you know, and I think it's just been fun. Like, I know you're a bit of a space guy, and it's been fun with some of those. Yes. Ones. And I'm glad to hear you use so the Starfield one actually is the actual stars as they are above you right now, as well. So like, it's been fun getting into kind of the astronomy side for a lot of these things, where there's a lot of watch history that was based around, you know, like trying to show like a moon phase dial on a mechanical watch is like a really complicated thing, because the moon's period is not consistent, and so it's really hard to do. And so like digging into learning the math behind how to actually, you know, reasonably accurately, you know, calculate it. Like I wouldn't launch a rocket based on my rendering of the stars, but it's like, it's accurate enough for showing on a just, you know, on a screen that's like 100 pixels by 100 pixels, like, right. My stars are pretty good.
It's awesome. Yeah, and I mean, essentially, you've got one complication that becomes up to 24. I mean, you can do up to hourly, right? Or hourly. Yep. So you can make them change every hour if you want to.
And then I think the other interesting part of that is, it's like, well, what do you do? What happens then when you tap on the complication? Like, sure. It was like the interesting question that I then had. So it's like this complication, usually when you tap on a complication, it shows you like what, you know, if you add like a workout, there is a workout complication you can add to your watch. And like, all it does is launch the workout app, which like is useful, I guess, but like is kind of it feels like it's taking up prime real estate just to be a launcher.
It's strictly an app launcher, right? Not informational.
Yeah. And so like, it was kind of interesting too with this app was like, well, I've built like whatever, like more than a dozen watch apps. So like, why don't I take all these watch apps and kind of combine them into one? And so like Watchsmith, like when you launch it, it does everything I can think of. Like, it has all kinds of crazy workout modes. It has a calendar. It has a time zone converter. It has some games. It has some astronomy information. There's all kinds of health and activity data that you can pull out of it. And I'm just like putting it all in one place, so that like in the same way that you could, if you put this in your corner, you know, like you were saying, you have it on the corner of your watch, like you open that and you can sort of easily get into whatever it is you want to do. Cause like, I will say, I'm someone, I never liked the honeycomb screen or the app chooser on the watch. And I don't know what it is about the dock, but I've never wrapped my head around like that being where I go to find an app that I want to open. And so for me, I only ever launch apps from the watch face. And so like, my goal was to try and make it so that every app I could ever want to, like, if I want to get the weather, I just tap on Watchsmith. If I want to start a workout, I tap Watchsmith. And kind of making it so that I just have like a launcher that always gets me to the information I want from, you know, just from one slot.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great, the app itself, not just the complication, which is like the you know, big benefit, but the app itself is like, you dig in and the first layer is sectioned, you know, by what's kind of, what could be its own app, and in some cases is its own app. And then also that's customizable because you can reorder those.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you don't care about games, by default, it's on the bottom. Or if you care a lot about the games, and the game that you include so far is hard. I've played around with it, and it's like, it's given me 30 seconds of delight and then a defeat. So yep.
No, it definitely has a little bit of a Flappy Bird feel to it, where like it's intended to be something that is, because like the reality is, it's a watch game, right? Like, you're not going to sit there and play a watch game for hours. Probably it's the kind of thing where like I made that game mostly for my kids. Like we're stuck in line and we're starting to get antsy, and it's like, here's something that they just can like play with for, you know, a minute or two, and it's a nice distraction. And it's like, I don't have to get my phone out, or it's not anything weird. Like, it's just like, here's my wrist, you know, play a little. And it's just like, it's just essentially three, you know, sort of circular pong, basically is the game you're playing.
Exactly.
Against yourself. And I have lots of ideas for other kind of games. And I mean, a big part of why I kind of went with this approach of, you know, rather than launching 20 different apps, like all the different features inside of this, like it made a lot more sense for me to kind of try and push them all into one. And so that now I have like a venue to sort of funnel that creative, energy into, and if I come up with a game, another game that I want to add, I can just add it into the app. And it kind of like, it'll just get better and grow over time. Rather than sort of trying to have, it's like, you know, it's like, I'm not sure if I would launch this as, you know, go through the whole process of launching an app just for like another silly game I came up with, but yeah. You know, like adding another game to the game section. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. I wonder if, I don't know if it's possible, but just an idea is like, a game that has you move your body, point in a different direction using compass.
Sure.
So obviously series 5 only, but, and above in the future, but like, okay, northeast and yeah. then, like the opposite, you know, and like sudden movements like that based on time.
Oh, sure.
That it could be like a, almost like a, you know, Wii level movement game.
Yeah. Well, so, the thought that immediately comes to mind for me with that is, I could almost imagine doing it. Like, the funny thing is, I'd have to end up calling the game like Dizziness.
Sure.
It would be like if you made the game like Simon, you know, where it's like you had like, it was like red, green,
yeah.
red, green, yellow. And so you could do the, exactly what you just said, but it's like north, north, south, north, yeah. southwest, north, southwest, east. And then your goal is to match the pattern. You could imagine like, you know, all kinds
of. That
could
be the biggest use of the compass
yeah. ever
so far. There's so much cool stuff here. Like, I don't think you can see your workout history built in with the workout app or the activity app, but so much to tell. And prior to today, I think it's only 24 hours. Or current day, but right here you've got workout history. In the health section, there's box breathing, which is like an exercise and meditation that's different from the Breathe app. That was new to me,
yeah.
but I found it very cool. Very
neat. Yeah, it's just like because my goal is to just it's like find different and interesting things. Like I love the Breathe app. Like I use it. Myself, and I've actually found it really helpful with my kids too. Like it's sometimes when they're upset and they're mad, it's like, it's nice to have something like I'll take my watch and I'll put it on their wrist and be like, which A, just like the field, I think it helps get their attention. Like, whoa, I'm wearing daddy's watch. And then it's like, now I don't want you to breathe with, you know, when the little thing comes out. And it's like, it's a different, it's one style of breathing. Like it's the, you know, like Apple's encouraging you. It's just like the deep breath in, deep breath out, which is great, but it's like the box breathing is another technique that I found for myself, which is 4 seconds in, hold, 4 seconds out, wait, 4 seconds in, hold, 4 seconds out, wait. And it's like it's a much more slow, kind of thoughtful version of it. Like it has a little mm-hmm. bit more of a, it's slightly more meditative because it isn't just breathing. It isn't just like right. the natural, you have to really concentrate on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's like I found it to be really helpful. And so it's like, well, I have this, like, why not just throw it in, you know, I can put it in the health section, as an alternative to, you know, that kind of like breathing meditation, and put it in there. And it's, you know, in the same way, I think I have put it, there's an area that shows you your heart rate data and it's like,
yes.
gives you, kind of a quick snapshot of what your heart rate's been like today. Which is like, just, it's something that is useful and that it's, but it's like, and you can get that in the heart app, but, it's, you know, it's nice to have in one place and a bit more, a bit more graphical. Like I don't, their version, I feel like it's so Spartan and, like it's just the white, it's like white and red. I just kind of, I don't know why, but when I think about my heart, I want it to be colorful.
Right. And you do a lot with like playful animations. So the heart section is one of those, where there's another that comes to mind where every time you change the interface or it loads in, then it's like, It's playful
yeah.
and it's not just like static. And I really appreciate that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's been fun to just be able to do that for the first time. Cause this is my kind of my love letter to Swift UI on watchOS where
yeah.
you can find, like I've been making apps, but it's like, been feeling like you've been making like the old style of making watch apps. Whereas it felt like you were making them like with one hand tied behind your back. Like you have this cool idea for like really subtle and sometimes small things, but it would be so hard to do if not completely impossible. Like, it would just be really, and it would be really frustrating that you couldn't do it now. And now finally Apple has kind of like given us that opportunity. And I've kind of tried to find as many places, to add those little touches. And I'm glad you kind of picked up on them because I'm trying to like really take advantage of that because it makes the app feel much more interactive and much more just like friendly. Like if you go into the calendar section, you know, when you change days, the day that you're looking at, if it's before the day that you're going to, it like flies off to the left and the day that you're going to flies in from the right. And if you go the other direction, they, you know, it flips the other way. And it's a really subtle effect. It only lasts like, you know, it's 0.2 seconds that little effect happens, but you know, it gives you a sense of place and it gives you a sense of where you are moving through your timeline, you know, of your calendar. And it's like that. I don't think I could have made that in WatchKit, like in the old version of WatchOS. And it's like, it's, I'm so excited and glad to be able to do that kind of thing now, where it's just, it makes watch apps feel like they're actual apps, that they're not just these kind of like static representations of data that, you know, they often would feel like before.
Yeah, it's so much a celebration. Like if you had first generation watch and you had this and you were comparing what you could do even with like Apple's built-in apps then, which had some special privileges, like it's such a celebration of what you can do now. I love that. I want to do a lightning round of feature request, because you can clearly see how WatchSmith is a platform, and that there's a ton of stuff that you'll be able to do in the future. You've got a section in the app for taking feature requests, because you know, it's a good idea to sort of prioritize what people really want this thing to do, and you can't spend a decade making it and then releasing like version 1.0 for to satisfy everyone. So it's something that, you know, will definitely be updated regularly and have whole new use cases. But some of the things that I'm thinking about are probably much harder than simply adding a new complication. Although sure. One I think is pretty easy. I had an idea that is in the morning period when I'm like brushing my teeth and everything, have a little pill reminder in the complication to take my medicine and log it as like, yeah, I took my vitamin today, mm-hmm. etc. So that's something that could be simpler. Something more complicated, I think, would be I've got a couple of questions, I guess. So would it be possible in the future to have location triggers where it changes not based on time, but based on location?
So I've built that. So it is possible. It is hard to do reliably. So it is something that is on my like to-do list. And like the app, like it's one of those funny things where all the code is in the app right now to do that. Like it is one of those, it's just turned off because I couldn't get it to the reliability that I wanted. I felt good about yet. It's certainly one of these things that I love. Cause that was my first kind of version of this app was, it had, you know, you have a default complication and then you trigger it by time, which is like the easiest one for me to do consistently, because obviously I know the time, like the time is very stationary. And then I also had location-based triggers, which I think is like, it's an obvious kind of next area to go to, that it's like when I'm at the gym, show me my activity data. When I'm at work, show me my work calendar. You know, when I'm at home, show me a picture of my kid, like whatever you could imagine that like you want it to be relevant there. And it's just, you know, it's so much of WatchOS. The tricky thing is it's such a lockdown platform for battery life reasons that there's only so much that I can do there. But yes, there's that. And I've also even thought of doing conditional triggers based on completion of, or like based on like conditions. So like the classic one would be, show me my activity rings until I've closed all my rings. And like once I've closed all my rings, then, you know, essentially, you know, disable that complication and show me my default or something like that.
It's like all the things that we eventually want the watch to do, then with every complication. But in the meantime, if you can do it, then that's room for experimentation.
Yeah, and so like I think conditional triggers is definitely it's a big feature that I expect to be continuing to work on, going forward, because the smarter you can make it, like the more personal it is, the more relevant it is, and like ultimately what I want is that like when you look at the watch, it's showing you the reason you looked at, you know, if you looked at you're looking at the complication, it should show you what you are interested in right at that moment.
Yeah, and you can kind of, I mean, in setting up my watch face or the complication with WatchSmith, it's like, you know, even if you like, I work from home, so location triggers aren't as important, and a lot of people are not to stay home. So it's you've got time, you know.
It's an excellent time to wait off on that feature as everyone is being forced to stay in one place.
That's right. But even if you do go to work, go to the gym, go home, then you probably have a pretty good routine that's based on time, and so you can sort of schedule anyway to say, this is when I'll be at work, this is when I'll be leaving, this is when I'll be at the gym, etc. So it's not like you can't achieve most of that with time alone. So that's really neat. Multiple corners. So for example, on the circular California face, you've got the sub-dial, which is where I put my heart rate. And then you've got four corner slots that can all be different things. And so currently with the WatchSmith, you can program one of the corners to change, and you can do each watch face that way. But you couldn't say like watchsmith 1, 2, 3, and 4,
sure,
and have all four dynamically change throughout the day. Would that be possible at all?
So the short answer is no. That Apple currently only allows us to export a single complication per type. Like in terms of, you can have a corner, you can have a circle, you can have a modular one, you can have the big rectangle one, but you only get one slot per app. And so, like, obviously it's technically possible in the sense that Apple's apps export multiple, like the weather app is the simple example, like the weather, you know, Apple's
conditions and temperature.
Yeah. It has like temperature and wind and UV index and like anything you could imagine as an exported type.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing that I've filed as many like requests with Apple as I possibly can, asking for the ability to export multiple types or multiple like slots for something. It is something that I could technically do if I created another app that sort of had a, that you know, so you would essentially like, you would install a helper app that'd be like, you know, sort of like WatchSmith's baby cousin who just like who sort of exists just to be in a, be an additional slot.
And that's so complex.
Yeah. And like that gets really, it just gets really fiddly. And so it isn't something that I like, I'm very hopeful that something like that might come in like watchOS, you know, watchOS 7 is only, you know, probably a couple months away from us at this point. And so I would love to be able to do that, because I think it, you know, it takes the same concept of kind of giving you control over what your watch looks like takes it to the, even the next level. Cause one of the things that I love is changing the font of, what my complications are like, mm-hmm. so that sometimes they're not, I don't use the, you know, like the sort of the same for this, that very watchy rounded, font that is kind of the default now. And what's kind of annoying is, it's like, it's always looks weird if like just one of my complications is using a different font than all the others. And so I'd love to sort of take over the whole thing and be able to make it so that all of my complications are consistent and visual in that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like not quite possible yet. Like hopefully at some point will become possible, and is definitely a deep desire of mine to be able to kind of be, you know, be able for you to be able to say like, this is WatchSmith 1, this is WatchSmith 2. And you can, you know, program them completely differently as makes sense for you.
Yeah, that's so cool. And then you can do this as a font if you want to right now. So, for example, you've got a bunch of fonts that you license and use, and then there's also a system built in. So if you wanted to match the rest of your faces, you could.
Yes. Oh, sure. Exactly. Like, I mean, if you want to run it just so it fits right in, by all means, just use the like the system rounded font on the infograph faces, or the system font if you're using it on a non infograph face. But like, yeah, like I've just really enjoyed using, like, what's amazing to me is how, which it's like, this is coming a bit from my experience, like researching and spending a lot of time with like mechanical watches, is how the character of a watch face is so dependent on the font that the, you know, that the numbers are shown in on that watch, that you can have something that it can feel austere, it can feel elegant, it can feel playful, it can feel kind of like athletic, based on the kind of font that you're using. And so, but like one of the things that's like, I want to be able to choose that font. And so, and I've pulled hopefully a starting set that I think runs the gambit a bit. Like there's some really, you know, there's some kind of silly ones. There's some that are a bit more like I really love the Decimal font, which is the kind of the default app, a font for the app, which is, a recent one that, Hoffler and, so like the Hoffler company, made for, that's based on like it's kind of a homage to the way that a lot of numbers and letters have to be shown on watches. Like they did this whole sort of artistic analysis of the way that you have to show numerals when they're shown on a watch. Like, and they're just looking at mechanical watches, is tricky because they're so small, but you want them to be really legible. And so you have these weird problems. Like, how do you differentiate between like a 0 and a 9 and a 6? Where it's, you know, if you just glance at them, those numbers can often look really, and an 8, probably too. Like those numbers can all look very similar. They're very round. And so like, how big do you make the circle on the top of the 9, and how, you know, sort of chunky do you make the 8? And like, there's lots of really cool things, and they've come up with a font that I think looks really good at small size on the watch. And is a nice kind of like counterpoint to San Francisco, which is Apple's font, which also right. looks good small on the watch, but is a very kind of, I find it to be a bit vanilla myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And font as a form of customization in your apps is sort of signature too, because I remember Check the Weather years ago,
yep.
which was like my favorite iPad weather app at the time, before it was retired, was like, what is it, Idlewild?
Yep, Idlewild.
Idlewild, yep. yep.
Which is one of the types that you can set in WatchSmith.
Yeah.
Idlewild is a funny font. It looks, I think it looks gorgeous, but it is very dramatic and very kind of like striking, which is kind of cool. And it's a really wide font. Yeah. So like San Francisco and a lot of the fonts on iOS are relatively narrow, which is usually a good thing, which is usually what you want. But Idlewild kind of goes the other way, where it's a really wide and short font. Like it kind of takes that dimension and kind of runs with it. And so it's a very different look. And like for certain types of like, I really like Idlewild for kind of like, when I'm running the big modular one to show my next event, I like you putting Idlewild there, because it's like I have enough space for the width of that font. And for some reason, it feels kind of like futuristic to me.
Yes.
And
yes.
It makes me feel like my meetings are like I'm in a sci-fi movie, and I'm meeting with I'm saving the world in this meeting. Even if the meeting is just like, it's like have lunch with Bill, like it just feels, there's something that kind of, it's every time I see it, it looks like, I feel like it's cinematic. And so
yes.
I put Idlewild in primarily so that I can make it so that when I'm, usually my days aren't super calendar driven, but when they are, I feel like I'm saving the world while I'm, going from meeting to meeting.
I love that. And I sort of just realized when I write, Idlewild is like my handwriting. It's short and wide,
yeah.
And it's playful and like action and definitely sci-fi. Like in 2013, it felt like it was unlike anything else I'd seen. And then I think Instagram Stories has like a font that's sort of like action based, like looking like that. Mm-hmm. It's not nearly the same, but it has the same feeling. And it's like I think you used to Check the Weather years ago. It was like ahead of its time, and like it came. That's one of the things. Is like with different fonts, they come into style. What's like default and popular, and that's one that I think has definitely you say it feels futuristic, and it does, but it also kind of feels like it's like of the era now that we're at.
Sure,
I love that. Last thing I want to ask about is just like feature requests. It's probably like way complicated, but this is where like WatchSmith would really become a platform, would be complex, but it kind of. Think about like drafts and how drafts use the X callback method to integrate with different apps. And I imagine the watch is way more limited than even what you could do there.
Yeah.
But I would love like my favorite run tracking or like run log app that you check your data afterwards is called Tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently requested, it only had an iPhone app, but it used your watch to work that data. And I recently requested to have a complication on the watch. Like this would be the whole purpose of the watch app, is to see your historical miles for the day, week, month, year, and ever. And now that is the complication. And like you launch it and it shows you that in more detail. That's the kind of perfect thing that is like, I want to have it on my watch face always because it's motivating, but you can see that being very useful as like a dynamic slot. And so rather than having to like rebuild it yourself, it would be very cool. Although I imagine challenging, if not even possible, to have other apps donate complications in a way and like it'd be integrated that way.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like the act doing it like at a system level, I think is pretty challenging and probably impossible for a lot of security reasons, that there's a lot of things that like I can't get data from another app in the system in any kind of clean, reasonable way that like vaguely you might be able to like put it in the pasteboard or something weird, but that's just like, it's not good. It's like one of the things that I have on my backlog for doing there, I think that it kind of gets there or towards what you're getting to is, so do you remember the board? I think it was called the Status Board by Panic.
Yeah, it was my first app review in 2013.
Yeah. So one of the things that they did in there is you could provide it with a URL and it would just display the contents of what that URL pointed to. And one of the things in my backlog is being able to let you specify a URL, and it would just display the value coming from that, which it'll vary dramatically onto how useful that is for someone and for what they actually could, you know, what they could put there. But it's like, if maybe not in the case necessarily of Tempo, but my hope is that you could imagine that there are people who have, you know, like you're a company and you want to see, you have kind of some kind of internal dashboard that you have access to. And if you can provide me with a URL and then like the path within, you know, usually it'll probably be like to, you know, to a data, you know, there'll be some kind of data format to be like, what element of this, you know, this data that you're showing me, do you want to actually show? Then I could just, you know, could pretty easily pull that on a regular basis and be showing that as a complication. And so it's a kind of a cool way potentially of make, you know, you can really make a one of a kind complication. That is, you don't have to, you don't have to go through and build a whole watch app yourself. If you're a company and you just want to show, like, you know, your daily sales, but you have an internal dashboard that you can, you know, kind of boil down to, like, here's this number in this spreadsheet or in this data export that I want to see my, you know, the daily sales volume, and like, sure. If you can, you know, if it's something that you can make accessible by just like, you know, some kind, you can give me a secret URL that I can hit, then great. Or, you know, you can kind of imagine all kinds of things like that. And so in general, that's the direction that I'm kind of expecting to head in terms of third-party integration. Like for me, something that I would love is being able to pull data from like my to-do list system, and to kind of have that sense of like how many items have I, you know, outstanding to-dos or those kind of things. And so that's something that I would love to be able to kind of pull. Like I could kind of do it now with reminders, because like Apple provides access to the reminders API. So I could pull like your number of like outstanding reminders. But, you know, having a kind of more generic way of pulling that data is something that I'm definitely like am thinking about, and I think would be really kind of like a promising direction to go down. Because yeah, like my goal with so much of Watchsmith is like I've spent the last 6 months like building infrastructure that like I want to make it so that it's, I've spent a lot of time making it so that it's easy for me to expand the app, both in terms of like technically, like there's a lot of like really complicated things underpinning the way that the dynamic complication system works, and the fact that you can just like keep swapping them in and out and the system just kind of works out what to do and keeps going. And then having like the space for it, that it's, you know, all of the interface is designed that it's like, it can just keep growing and it can keep expanding. And you know, if you have, someone has an idea for something, that it can just be like, it can find its home in there and then just be added to it.
I love that. That would be just a power user feature, because the app is already kind of like, you know, that you want your watch to do something that it cannot do. So it's for the experience, I think. But then when you kind of hit the limits of what's possible, then that kind of feature where you pull in from the URL, like that, it's like, you know, you can just imagine what you can do from there. And you kind of need it to know that you want it.
Yeah.
But it's such a power user feature. It's like, that's something that you could unlock.
Yeah, and exactly. And it's like, I think it's the kind of thing where my goal with this is to make it so that it's like the app is useful and like, it hopefully would make sense. I mean, we'll find out, but hopefully it makes sense for like everybody, that like in terms of if you're an Apple Watch user, that wanting to customize your complications or have access to a bunch of different like cool workout modes or, you know, a nice looking weather app, like might just be useful for some people, but it has like it can grow from those kinds of like useful but straightforward use cases, you know, to something that is much more like, you know, sort of more of a power user or more of someone who really is trying to use their watch in really kind of like robust ways. Like the app can hopefully kind of like expand that breadth with you, and kind of, you know, like your the way you configure your watch, your Watchsmith complication is way more complicated than I do. Like mine, I have a default, I have a nighttime, and I have weather in the morning. Like that's what I show on mine. And like I have, you know, I have three things there, and it sounded like you have basically your entire 24-hour period covered with something, which is like, that's awesome. And like, if someone really wanted to and have like a different thing for each 24 hour block of the day or every hour of the blade, like more power to you. But, or you can just set the default, don't have any timed ones, and you just want it to be like the date, but it's prettier. Like it uses a nice font, and like, great. Like go for that. Like that's, it can totally be useful for just like that really straightforward, like sort of more straightforward use rather than something that's like super complicated and like deep in the weeds.
Yeah, I think that Watch Smith is awesome. And by, I mean, I said it before, but like, what a cool name. I mean, David Smith, Watch Smith, tinkering with your watch. It's so, yep. It's so perfect.
Yeah. Yep, that was one of those. I've struggled a lot with names recently. And that one just like, once that name like popped in my head, it's like, nope, that's the name. Like,
yeah, realize that's the answer.
Yeah, it very quickly became like that just sort of settled in my mind as like, that's because I think it speaks to like, I think I love the word tinkering that you just used there. Like that, yes. I love this sense that like I feel like aspirationally I've always been someone who wanted to like tinker with my hands, like be the kind of person who like does woodworking or some kind of like physical craft like that. But it's never been something that I really I've ever gotten into, but it's always kind of like aspirationally been something that I thought would be cool to do. And this app has definitely been kind of an outlet for that, where I feel like I'm tinkering and I keep coming up with, like the first version, the first set of, I think I have, 37 complications in Watchsmith right now. Like that first set, like there's probably another like twice that long in my backlog of things that I have ideas for and things that I just like, I want to add, but you know, at some point I hadn't had to draw the line and be like, this is version one, this is enough. And I can keep adding and keep growing and keep tinkering and giving you just like, some of them are just subtle tweaks and some of them are like totally new categories of complication. But you know, it's kind of fun to be able to tinker in that way and be like, you know, I have this huge list of ways that I want to, like, how do you display the weather data? Which is something that superficially I feel like seems really easy. Like, you just like, well, you show like the temperature and I guess like if it's going to rain, but like the ways that you can do that are so wide and varied. And, you know, is it a graphical thing? Is it something that you're trying to give a lot of detail? Is it something that you're just trying to be aesthetic? Like, you know, is it just, would you just like kind of just want to see the color? Like, and it's just like when it's hot, it's red. And when it's cold, it's blue. And when it's kind of nice, it's green. Like, I don't know, like that's like one of my ideas. It's like, you can go all down all these different rabbit holes of like, kind of just like different ways of sewing something that seems so simple, but is such a, like a playground to explore.
Yeah. The app is so cool. Where can people find the app?
Sure. So, I mean, if you just search for Watchsmith in the App Store, it's probably the easiest way to go. And if you go to my website, david-smith.org, there'll be a link there as well to find it. And it's Watchsmith app on Twitter if you want to kind of like follow along with the development and kind of release notes and kind of where I'm going. And I kind of expect to start posting now that it'll kind of be out of the like semi-secret phase of development.
Right.
I look forward to kind of being able to kind of share my development process with new complications. And that'll be Watchsmith app on Twitter is where I kind of expect to do that, to kind of show a little bit of like work in progress, you know, these kind of like half finished prototypes of like a new idea or a new concept I'm coming up with.
Yeah, a great place to take feedback and everything. And that was an awesome, you know, 2018 October, it was like so many developers and designers were like playing around with what you could do, what you could do. And it was like a really cool thing to come to Twitter every day and see like what's new in that field.
Yeah.
So Watchsmith, the account will be that too now. Like, that's awesome. Awesome. Well, David Smith, thank you so much for joining me. This has been an absolute blast and a pleasure and a long time coming. I'm so glad to do this.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. And thank you so much for having me. It's I love talking about watches. And so this is the perfect place to do that.
All right. Thank you so much.